Yasoda Nandana Bhaja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Kira Banachari Yamuna Kira Banachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Gopi Jana Bawa Ba Girbhare Dhari Gopi Jana Bawa Ba Girbhare Dhari Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Kira Banachari Yamuna Kira Banachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabihari
Vishnupad Paramahamsa Prida Chakracharya Astachada Sri Srimad His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Jayam Vishnupad Paramahamsa Prida Chakracharya Astachada Sri Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki Jai. Dantakoti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai. Namachara Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. Istan Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Premsadho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nishananda Shri Adoita Gadadhar Shivasati Vora Bhakta Vrindaki Jai Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopal Kunal Samakunda Radha Kunda Gopi Dham Ki Jai Shri Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai Shri Mayapur Dham Ki Jai Jagannath Puri Dham Ki Jai Ganga Mayi Ki Jai Jamuna Mayi Ki Jai Tulsi Devi Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Shri Hari Nam Sankirtan ki jai, Vihad Madanga ki jai, Samabheda Bhakta Brinda ki jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Garanga, all glories to Divine Grace, Shri Prabhupada ki jai. I would also like to add my prayers. Whatever they're worth, which aren't much, considering my spiritual stature at this point of life. For those devotees in particular who have been afflicted by this new disease, actually it's not new, birth, death, disease, and old age are there from the very beginning. Srila Prabhupada certainly warned us about these things repeatedly. But I'd also like to specially acknowledge a very senior devotee who I understand is very ill, is Dhananjaya Prabhu.
Yes.
Dhananjaya Prabhu was, when, as Nanda was explaining on Gaur Praneem, when we first installed Gaur Nitai here in 1974 in the city on the what's called the Depot Avenue property, we made everything from scratch. We didn't know what we were doing. We tried to find some cloth. I think some of the outfits were made out of velvet. We'd go up to Boston, New York, and buy jewels at these special shops. Not real ones, of course, but the decorative jewels and so forth. But then later, in 1975, maybe 74, 75, sometime, Dhananjaya, he tells this story very nicely. He was, for those of you who don't know, he's a very, very senior devotee. He was one of the pioneers of the London temple. And even though he hasn't written a book, let's just leave it at that, written a book about those that period of time, he was instrumental in founding that temple and also in cultivating George Harrison. As much as any other devotee, he was very, very important. His preaching was important, and Prabhupada gave him that specific service to sell the makuts from Vrindavan, the basic pattern for the deity outfit. So he would go around to all the temples all over North America. That was his business adventure, and he came to Gainesville many times and spent many days here. And we, of course, bought what we could from him and got to know him very well. And later on, when I would go to India every year, I'd see him. He was the manager of the MBT for quite a while, and I'd see him there, and he's just loaded. Has he ever spoken here? So you all know that how many wonderful stories he has about his association with Prabhupada.
He gave Saturday class.
He's spoken many times in LA, but he's just loaded. There's just like a treasure trove, an unlimited treasure trove. So, you know, I'd personally like to wish him and all the other devotees that are suffering in what can only be described as an extraordinary period of time. I'll get to this verse in a minute. but also, while I'm here and I have the microphone, so to speak, particularly significant that this November coming up in a few months will be the 50th anniversary of the founding of Krishna House. Yeah. That was started by Garga Muni, the original Garga Muni, who joined on 26 Second Avenue and who was single-handedly taken over Facebook. For those of you who have befriended him, you'll see that.
Yes.
It's like a tsunami of very wonderful post, because he has so many, also so much association with Prabhupada. And he came here in November 1970, or actually he was probably here in October, November 1970, somewhere around there. And he sat down on the campus at the same place where they do Krishna lunch, under a tree, and he chanted Hare Krishna, had kirtan, and then he would give out whatever little bits of prasadam he was able to find or put together, like apples or oranges. And within just a few days, he had hundreds of people coming every day to the campus to hear him lecture and chant. So in November, Christmas break of 1970, he had been staying in different places around the city, wherever he could find a place. I've told you the story. One night, me and Krishna Krishna, who also was a student here, and my dear friend, along with Gayatri, we were all kind of like buddies. We had a little clique of many other devotees too, Veer Krishna Maharaj and Aja and Gaudi, many other devotees that we were friends in college. We'd go looking for him every night to find him, to talk to him some more, and we'd find him in an attic somewhere, or next to a hot water heater in the middle of the winter, trying to keep warm. All we had was a little chudder. So finally, I felt sorry for him, and I said, okay, well, just move into my apartment. And that's that Jewish thing, you know. Okay, I can't stay anymore. Just move into our apartment. You know, you have a place to stay. And then within just a few days, we started a lunch program in the Krishna House. That was the first lunch program, was started right there in this little apartment, which was about two blocks from campus. And within a few days, a week or two, we had hundreds of people coming every day for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And here he taught Gayatri how to cook. The students just loved his prasadam, and they were just, we didn't have room to fit them all in our little apartment. They were out on the lawn. They were all over the street, all over the neighborhood. So that's coming up in November when he first came here of 1970. And then next year, which will be here in the Battered Mind Lash, and that's always been my personal goal. Let me just make it to 50. I wish it was chronological 50, which I'm way beyond. But in our birth years, I was hoping, oh, let me just make it to 50, and then maybe I can die in peace. Maybe. Unlikely. But nonetheless, next July, next summer, is the 50th anniversary of Prabhupada coming and visiting Gainesville and speaking at the university. So I just thought I would mention those two little tidbits because what I was going to build up to say was that I don't consider myself a senior devotee or this or that. I've been hanging around for a long time, since 1970 when Bhagavan Muni. I've just been hanging out in ISKCON. I'm just still here somehow or other, and I've been around for a long time, and I have never seen anything like what we are going through right now. I thought I had seen it all going through the 60s and the 70s and the early years of the movement. So many political administrations have come and gone, dead and buried. New ones come, you know, the world has changed in so many different ways, but I've never seen anything like this before. Where actually the temple manager says, "Don't come to Mangalarti." Yeah. I never thought I would hear that words out of any ISKCON leader. And I know it's not criticizing, I'm saying I understand it completely. And we have to protect the devotees, but I would never have dreamed that not only this project being what it is today, and all these devotees living in this community, but to see the things that are going on in the world, and this virus that's spreading all over the world and is even affecting devotees, I never have seen anything like this. I mean, obviously, there's always been birth, death, disease, and old age. People have been getting old, not myself, of course, but others have been getting old. They've been getting sick and diseased, and then they've been dying. We've all been through that with our families, our parents, probably relatives. So many diseases out, and there's always going to be one. If it's not this one, it will be another one. And there's actually a silver lining in all this. Also, is that I was reading. I think Prangobinda just mentioned it also in his announcement that. Many people, non-devotees or people in the material world, they're taking this as an opportunity for self-introspection. Because they're all locked down or quarantined in their apartments or houses, and they can't go out or they won't go out. And they're all starting to contemplate the meaning of life. What are we here for? What are we really meant to be doing? Because this is something that doesn't recognize your bank account, doesn't recognize your neighborhood and your zip code, doesn't recognize your political success or your political prominence. It cuts across all your gender, your religion, your race, anything. All this is an equal opportunity disease, as are all diseases. But many people are saying now that they're confined, they're sick of TV, they're sick of this, they're sick of that, and they're starting to engage in more and more self-introspection. What is the purpose of life? Why are we here? What are we meant to do? Why is this disease that is uncontrollable? Even the government. Prabhupada said many times, you know, these political leaders, they're so powerful. He gives the example of John Kennedy. And for those of you who are interested, Bob Dylan just came out with a new song about the assassination of John Kennedy. I mention that because he's had a lot of association with devotees. And that's documented, that's not a rumor. that so-and-so let us build or brought the altar card in some vacant lot in New York City. This is fact. Many devotees, eyewitnesses, and spent time in the L.A. temple. I think some of them even drove across the country with him on one thing. So I mention that because even on this occasion, Prabhupada, he wrote a song about John Kennedy's assassination, and Prabhupada used to give Kennedy as an example, the most powerful man in charge of the most powerful country in the world, but he could not even protect himself. Same thing with Gandhi, political leaders, millions of followers, you know, huge military industrial complex at their disposal, and they cannot protect themselves. So what to speak of us? Who will protect us? Where will we find shelter? So, independent of everything else, we have the holy name, we have our beads, hopefully, or get a new pair if you've lost them. And you have a living guru that can chant on them again. and we can read Prabhupada's books. And so we have all these things. And of course, you can cook prasadam too, your own prasadam. Offer it. I know many devotees have their own deities and so forth. So we are well equipped, actually.
Yes.
Even though we all want to come to the temple and see these gorgeous deities, we all really want to come here. And after a few days, we really start feeling that separation. But we also know Krishna's in our hearts. And when Prabhupada came here to Gainesville in 71, we just had a little two-story place over there near downtown. And we were primitive, literally. That's the way I would describe our temple. It was primitive. Prita Ananda Maharaj, not a Maharaj then, but he was the temple president, and Gayatri had done a painting of Pachatattva and put that on a radiator in the living room, and that was our altar. And when Prabhupada came, he did not even pause for a second, like at the door. Oh, what is this? Who are you? What are you doing? He just immediately prostrated himself and offered his obeisances to that Pachatattva that was painted by somebody that was, you know, Gayatri at that time had been a devotee for maybe 4 or 5 months. She never associated with the artist. She didn't know anything. She was a natural artist, but she painted this, and when that was what we were worshiping, as Prabhupada said, you can worship a picture, that Krishna's in that picture. He's in that picture. If you worship with love and devotion. So when Prabhupada came, he saw our primitive little altar. He didn't even give it a second thought. He just immediately prostrated full obeisances in front of that painting. So we're well equipped to weather this storm. And devotees, Mukhya Prabhu is offering so many wonderful services for the temple, by the temple, for devotees who can't get to the store or get out to do certain things, and made the temple available for those services. So this is how devotees protect each other. And these are the kind of things that our movement should be doing. This is why we're in a movement, and we're not, as we're about to hear, see Mayavadis who don't have this kind of association and are quite quite austere and quite strict. So we should get to this verse before we run out of time. Do we have any Bengali specialists here? Maybe you can read all the verses in Sanskrit, and then we can do them all in English. Or how do you want to do it?
That's fine.
Everybody reads. Okay, we'll do it together, but you lead the Bengali. A Brahmana who saw the wonderful behavior of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to Prakashananda Saraswati and described the Lord's characteristics. The Brahmana told Prakashananda Saraswati, "There is a sannyasi who has come from Jagannath Puri, and I cannot describe his wonderful influence and glory." Everything is wonderful about that sannyasi. He has a very well-built and luxuriant body, and his complexion is like purified gold.
Anjanam Lambita Bhuja Kamalam Nayana Yatake.
He has, he has arms that extend to his knees, and his eyes are like the petals of a lotus. In his person are all the transcendental symptoms of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When one sees all these features, one takes him to be Narayan himself. Whoever sees him immediately begins to chant the holy name of Krishna. We have heard about the symptoms of a first-class devotee in Srimad Bhagavatam, and all those symptoms are manifest in the body of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. His tongue is always chanting the holy name of Krishna, and from his eyes, tears incessantly flow like the flowing Ganges. Sometimes he dances, laughs, sings, and cries, and sometimes he roars like a lion. His name, Krishna Chaitanya, is all auspicious for the world. Everything about him, his name, form, and qualities, unparalleled. Simply by seeing him, one understands that he possesses all the characteristics of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such characteristics are certainly uncommon. Who will believe it? Prakashananda Saraswati laughed very much to hear this description. Joking and laughing at the Brahman, he began to speak as follows. Prakashananda Saraswati said, "Yes, I have heard about him. He is a sannyasi from Bengal, and he is very sentimental. I have also heard that he belongs to the Bharti Sampradaya, for he is a disciple of Keshava Bharti. However, he is only a pretender." Purport. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was considered bahuvuka, sentimental, because he was always seen in the bhava stage. That is, he always exhibited ecstatic love for Krishna. However, foolish people considered him sentimental. In the material world, so-called devotees sometimes exhibit emotional symptoms. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's ecstatic love cannot be compared to the imitative emotional exhibitions of pretenders. Such exhibitions do not continue for very long. They are temporary. We actually see that some emotional imitators exhibit certain symptoms, but immediately after their exhibition, they are attracted to smoking and other things. In the beginning, when Prakashananda Saraswati heard of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's activities, he considered them to be of a pretender. Consequently, he called him a loka patarika, a pretender. Maya bodies cannot understand the transcendental symptoms exhibited by a devotee. Therefore, when such symptoms are manifest, the Maya bodies equate them with temporary emotional feelings. However, Prakashananda Saraswati's statement is offensive, and consequently he should be considered an atheist, Prashanandi. According to Srila Rupa Goswami, since Prakashananda Saraswati was not engaged in the Lord's devotional service, his sannyas is to be considered Phalgu Vairagya. This means that since he did not know how to use things for the Lord's service, his renunciation of the world was artificial. So this battle, so to speak, between the personalist and the impersonalist has been going on for a very long time. It's actually been going on since time immemorial. But in Lord Chaitanya's time, 500 and something years ago, it was particularly intense because at that time, the Mayavadis, the impersonalists, had control of Bengal. It was dominated by the Mayavadi Mats, the Mayavadi preachers and Mayavadi ashrams were prevalent all over Bengal, all over India, as a matter of fact, but particularly in West Bengal, the Mayavadis were very, very prominent. So on Lord Chaitanya's appearance, as he was doing his travels or going about India and so forth, he could not control these ecstatic symptoms of love of God. As we know, we have Gaur Nitai, and Lord Nityananda represents or is Balaram, for which all spiritual strength emanates. And then, of course, Lord Nityananda is the combination of Krishna and Radharani. It's Krishna coming in the mood of Radharani so that he could experience what she was experiencing. So actually, I like to always point out that with Gaur Nitai is the bargain packet. It's the best deal because you get five for the price of two, so to speak. Whereas Krishna is Krishna and Balaram is Balaram and so forth, but with Gaur Nitai you're getting all five of them. And in an interesting letter that Prabhupada wrote to Mukumlal, Bhakti Madhurya something, 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 he said that sometimes the devotees, they manifest these ecstatic symptoms of love of God. Like Lord Chaitanya, these are just a few samples of the kind of features that he was manifesting. He would fall into ecstasy and fall in the Ganges River, and he'd be swept down the river, and all the devotees had to go running after him, someplace where they could get in and grab him and pull him out. He was always falling into this consciousness of Radharani's feelings of love for Krishna, and he was overwhelmed with these things. So the Mayavadis, it's interesting here that Prabhupada refers to them as atheists, meaning that they don't believe in God. Or gods, that's the definition of an atheist. They do not believe in God. So the Mayavadis, they are the most offensive. They are the most offensive because they deny Krishna's form. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, this is who I am. I am this, I am that, and so forth. And he provides a complete description. But instead of recognizing Krishna's position, they say, oh no, we can give our own interpretation of the Bhagavad Gita. We don't have to worry about this or that. And those people, those Vaishnavas, those Gaudiya Vaishnavas, whoever they are, they're simply sentimentalists. Because anybody that uses their senses in some way is considered to be in Maya, according to them. Because when one is actually realized, then they cease all material activity, and they simply stay in that state of oneness, of artificial meditation, of being one with the impersonal Brahman. But because they deny Krishna, Krishna says, this is who I am. I am like this. And he comes specifically to show us who he is and manifest these pastimes in Vrindavan, killing so many demons, lifting Govardhan Hill, so many other things. And he is a person. This material world, as we know, is a perverted reflection of the spiritual world. If everything is nothing, and that's why the Mayavadis are the same as the scientists. They all say that ultimately everything is either void or impersonal Brahman. That it's spiritual, you know, higher realization is there's no form, you give up your individual identity, you merge with the Brahman, or you just merge with the void. You just go, you know, you're out of existence. But yet, if that's the case, and Prabhupada always emphasizes, where have all of these living entities come from? where have all these things in the material world, how were they all, how did they all come about? Because Krishna has form, we also have form, as his part and parcels. His form is full of the six opulences. Ours is just limited, like the sun and the sunshine. We are a small particle of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, part and parcel. But they think that the Mayavadis think that they actually become Krishna. And it doesn't matter. Krishna, Brahma, Shiva, they're all the same. And they actually think that they become God themselves. So this is very, very offensive. And this is, Prabhupada categorizes this in the same way as he refers to the material scientists, because they say the same thing, that it's all here by chance. Everything is here by chance. That in the very beginning there was a big bang, and there was a hole in the universe, and then there was a bang, and then everything emanates from that void of space. Somewhere, somehow, sometime, it all came out of this void. So the Mayavadis are saying essentially the same thing, that originally there's this impersonal Brahman, and that's all there is, and yet for some inexplicable reason, the Brahman takes form and engages in all these different things, but ultimately all of this is illusion. Everything is illusion. So that's the case. Why do we have this body to begin with? Why do we have these senses to begin with? And that is the difference that Lord Chaitanya taught us, Prabhupada taught us, that we take all of these senses and purify them. That we have form because Krishna has form. And we are meant to serve Krishna. We are not meant to merge with the Brahma Jyoti. We are not meant to, at the time of death, it's not that all of these chemicals simply merge with the conglomeration of infinite chemicals somewhere, someplace, somehow. So there are many kinds of atheists in this material world. And some are very hard to identify. They're not obvious on the surface. But anybody who denies the existence of God and that God ultimately has form, and we're actually the only ones that are teaching that God has form. If you ask followers of any other religion, well, what does God look like? Where does he live? What's his address, as Prabhupada used to say? What does he do all day? Where did he come from? And they can't imagine that God would actually have form and be a person and have all of these unlimited eternal pastimes going on in the spiritual world. It's beyond their comprehension. They can't envision it. So they deny it. And it's easier and more convenient to just become God themselves, which is a part of that manifestation. It's the highest manifestation of the false ego, is that, yes, now I have become God myself. Or the scientists, they are claiming, well, they are actually God. Of course, the whole allegory of the Frankenstein monster and that story of Frankenstein was that these scientists think that sooner or later they will be able to create life. But there's no example of that. There's no instance in the history of mankind where a scientist has been able to create something from nothing. If you give a scientist a petri dish full of chemicals, all the chemicals, we know what all the chemicals are, earth, air, fire, water, they know all these, they have all these formulas, and what's that chart called, where they have all the elements and everything else? The what? Yeah, that's it. So they know all these things, they have all this, it's already there, and if you take a course in college or biology or something, you learn DNA and all this and these chemicals and that chemical. So they know what all the chemicals are. They know what they all are. So if we give them, say, okay, Mr. Scientist, here's all your chemicals. Here's everything that you need. Now, if you claim that life comes from matter, then create it. Do it. But they can't. Instead, what the scientists do is as stated mostly, primarily, in the Bhagavad Gita and the Bhagavatam, it's stated. All they do is create different ways for the living entities in this material world to forget Krishna, to forget God, and to provide all facility for sense gratification. That's what the scientists do. Or all facility for the destruction of mankind. They engage in horrible works meant to destroy the world. And going back to the situation that we're now in now, this is nothing unusual. This should be no surprise. We're in the Kali Yuga. Sometimes we forget. We go to the temple, we read Prabhupada's books, we see the beautiful deities, and we think, wow, this is wonderful. What's the problem here? And the problem is that the scientists, they're now scrambling to try to figure out what to do about this disease that's ravaging the planet. They cannot control these things. So all they can do is, when they're not busy trying to find a solution to these birth, death, disease, and old age, which they can't do, they cannot stop people from growing old, they cannot stop people from becoming diseased, and as soon as you cure one thing, then something else will just come along to take its place. And therefore, this was all predicted in the Bhagavatam, in the 12th canto. This was all predicted. Now, Srila Vyasa could see the nature of the Kali Yuga. And if you read the 12th canto of Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, all of these predictions, disease, pestilence, diminution of lifespan, war, corrupt leaders, it's all there. All of these. And why is this unusual? Well, because these predictions were made 5,000 years ago when Srila Vyasadeva spoke the Bhagavatam. During the administration of Parikshit Maharaj, up to Parikshit Maharaj, the earth planet had never seen these kinds of things before. The Satyayuga, Tretayuga, the Dwapara-yuga, these things were not like they are in the Kali Yuga. The Kali Yuga simply means the last chapter, the beginning and end of it. End of days, as they say in the Bible. Armageddon, as they say. That's what the Kali Yuga is. Previously, there was none of this. And the political leaders were held responsible. There's one story where somebody's child died. I can't remember who it was. And she went to the king and she complained. Do you know who that was? But there was somebody in particular who, it could have been a man or woman, I don't know.
Somebody's son died.
Anyway, their child died, just like Khan Govinda was just reading, somebody's child died. And they went to the king. They didn't go to the Shans and say, what's going on here? Why did this happen? Why didn't you save my child? Why didn't you do this? They went to the king and complained. How can this happen in your kingdom? How are you letting this go on under your rule? The king was responsible. The Rajarshis, the saintly rulers, just up until recent times, after Maharaj Parikshit, everything started to go downhill, accelerated. What started going downhill much faster. But up in that time, even a child or somebody died untimely. They went to the king and said, what are you doing wrong? What have you done that my child has suffered the reaction for your activities or your lack of activities? Because as we know, the king in the Varnashram system, the king could charge 25% taxes right off the top. 25%, no deductions, no loopholes, none of this stuff. Everybody paid 25%. But the king had to take that money and do sacrifices to offer obeisances to the Supreme Personality of Godhead or the demigods or whatever the situation was. They would do that. They would regularly hold big sacrifices and they'd take all the tax money and they'd have big celebrations with chanting and vishadam, and everybody would be worship according to the Vedic scriptures. Everybody would be engaged according to their varna and ashram and the varna ashram system. And therefore, there was none of these things in prior ages. There were no diseases. There were no shortage of food, shortage of this, shortage of that. The water was pure, the air was pure, and there was an abundance of everything. Just like when Prithu Maharaj, it's very interesting, I was just reading that recently, when he was assassinated by the Brahmanas, I mean when Baina was assassinated by the Brahmanas, there was no king, there was no ruler. And so, as a result of that, the common criminals became rampant. And they started plundering and stealing and terrorizing the citizens. So the Brahmins understood that. And they, even though Prabhupada said it was not the business of the Brahmins to get involved in politics, he said, it is still their responsibility to make sure that the leaders, the government leaders, followed these scriptures, followed the Varnashram system. So when Prithu Maharaj, he, not unlike some modern leaders whose names will not be mentioned in public, actually thought he was the Supreme Personality of God, he stopped all the worship, even of the demigods. He said, don't worship all this. And this is what Indra did. I mean, this is what happened when Krishna stopped the demigod worship in Vrindavan. Said, offer it all to me. And then Indra became very upset and decided to test Krishna's potency. So that's what happened with King Venu. He thought he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. His power and wealth and his sense gratification inflated his false ego beyond any kind of limits that we can, beyond anything that we can imagine, way beyond anybody that's on the political scene right now. And so the Brahmanas said, well, we have to do something about this. We can't let this situation go on. So they got together, and by a special mantras and so forth, special curses, they assassinated him. Then after the assassination, the common criminals, there's two kinds of criminals. There's common criminals, and then there's the government criminals. Prabhupada says the government criminals, those who are stealing the tax money and putting it into their own pocket, instead of doing jagya, instead of doing these sacrifices, instead of doing, as Prabhupada said in the Kali Yuga, having big festivals and everybody, the whole town comes together every day, every week, whatever the schedule is. They all come together. We have our Sunday love feast. So once a week, they all come together and everybody chants. And then afterwards, distribute prasadam to everybody. Sumptuous Krishna prasadam. Prabhupada uses that expression. That is the modern responsibility of the government leaders, to take that tax money and hold these festivals where people come and they chant Hare Krishna, and afterwards they receive and consume prasadam. He said, this is the only thing. This is our entire political platform. Just like they passed this new law. They call it the coronavirus law to salvage the economy.
There's a new law?
Yeah, it was just passed yesterday. And it's got all this money for these and all these money for that. Some of us will be happy to hear that the airlines are going to get bailed out, even though all they do is shorten your seat, your leg room, and charge you to even breathe on an airplane now. Or to speak and put something, you know, they're getting bailed out. All the corporate cronies are getting bailed out. And then they're so proud. All these people that are losing their jobs. We're going to send them a check for $1,200. The corporate CEOs that are getting bailed out, they make $1,200 a minute. And yet they're so proud. Oh, we're going to give the people $1,200. Look what we're doing for you. So they are the biggest criminals. And Prabhupada said, just like a common criminal, a dacoit, a thief, a murderer, they should be immediately punished, then so should the government ministers that are also corrupt. They should also be punished. because their responsibility, their duty, if they take the tax money, then it has to be spent for the spiritual upliftment of the citizens. If they put it into their own pocket, and if you examine it very carefully, when they go into office, they're worth a certain amount of money. When they come out of office, they're all multimillionaires. Where'd they get that money? Where'd it all come from? How are they, you know, how are they getting so fabulously wealthy when they were, and practically all of them. But even the ones that are very rich when they go in office, they just use the government to get even richer and richer and richer. All the money goes to enhance themselves. So whereas, you know, somehow the statistics are that 1% of the population has more wealth than 50% of the entire world is concentrated in 1%. This is not the Vedic system. This is not the Vedic system. So, you know, in previous ages, they never heard of cancer. Cancer was, you don't read about cancer. I mean, there were some wars from time to time. That was a necessary evil for the Kshatriyas to exert their authority to keep the criminals and rogue governments under control so that everybody contributed to this Varnashram sacrifice, of the whole consciousness of the entire population was raised, and people could actually become, through this Varnashram system, could actually become Krishna conscious. And sometimes we think, well, that, but Prabhupada, you know, we just have, all we have is like the Brahminical class. We don't have Vaishyas and Kshatriyas and so forth and so on. We only have Brahmins. But actually, Prabhupada, when he was coming back to America in 1977, and this is comes from people who were with him, like Aviram, Sri Rupa, others, who were with him, he was coming back to teach us Varnashram. And he was going to go to Gita Nagari. That was his destination. They had it all worked out. They had the cars set up. They're going to take him right from the airport. Balavanta and others had cleared his customs so he could come. The plane would go right out to the tarmac and meet Prabhupada, and he was going to go right to Gita Nagari. And what he was going to do was to establish, to train us, just like Lord Chaitanya was training us in chanting Hare Krishna, taking prasad, the association of devotees, this yuga dharma of chanting the holy name. Yes, that's the foundation. But Prabhupada's next step was Varnashram dharma. That's what he wants. Because it's the general people, all the people simply aren't going to become devotees. That's just the sad facts of life. They're not. You know, if we just look at our own movement, even counting all the, you know, tens of thousands, millions of devotees in India and other places of the world, how many devotees are on this planet? How many Vaishnavas, followers of Srila Prabhupada, are on this planet right now, this very minute? You know, they can be counted. They can be counted. Except if you do a mathematical calculation to get the percentage of how many there are of us, it's so small, that's very hard to count. It's 0.00000, just a handful. So what do we do for the rest of the society? What do we do for the rest of the population? Varnashram dharma. That was Prabhupada's plan. So somehow, future generations will be able to do that. Keeping alive the spirit of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, fighting off the impersonalists, fighting off the material scientists, and I hope I'm not back to see it, although I probably will be, but hopefully it'll be successful. But anyway, we should take this is a warning. This whole thing is a warning now. I don't know why they needed this all of a sudden as a warning, because it has a big economic impact. Because that's one of the common themes of the 12th canto. Spiritual success will be by how much you can satisfy your senses, how much food you can put in your belly, how much money you make. That is the criterion by which we judge how successful we are in this material world. How much money we make, how much food we can eat, how much this, how much sense gratification we can have. That is the measuring stick for this age. So this is a warning. I don't know why it's any more of a warning than cancer, which is or even like they say, the flu, which kills millions of people every year, and there was smallpox, and there was polio, and there was cholera. What's the difference? So you get the scientists working feverishly. They're going to come up with a vaccine. Okay, they'll get rid of it. You go to CVS and get your coronavirus vaccine along with the other. And then just something else will come along and take its place. And it's going to get worse and worse and worse. And the reason it's so getting so much attention now is because it has an impact on their economy. It's impacting the economy. If people get the flu and they, you know, it's here and there and they go to the hospital or whatever, it's no big deal. But this has disrupted everything. The airlines, the hotels, Walt Disney World is closed. I mean, this has got such a, yes, you know, all of these things. The football season's off, the baseball season's off, everything's off. It's all come to a standstill. And what does that mean? It means people are out of work and now they're losing money. That's why this is getting so much attention. Because of the money. Because the money is the key to sense verification. That's how we enjoy the senses. And now that's being impacted by all these economic upheavals, stock market, everything else. That's why it's getting so much attention. But when they get rid of this, something else will come along. Our duty, our business is the same. I keep thinking, what would Prabhupada say if he was here? If we went to Prabhupada, well, Prabhupada, what should we do? And Prabhupada would say, what can be done? What can be, I just thinking, what can be done? We simply go along with our program just like before and just like forever. The program started the Sankirtan movement. Okay, so we can't do it here in the temple room maybe so much, but in this day and age, we have all this technology. And as Prabhupada said, it's like the scalpel. You know, this material facility is neither good nor bad. It depends on how you use it. The surgeon uses it to cut out disease or to cut my throat. Cut your throat, same scalpel. So we use this technology. We can't fly around anymore. Like when Prabhupada was asked about that, when he was flying all over the world, how many dozens and dozens of times a little old man, flying all around the world, trying to keep this movement together. But now we have all this social media, we have the internet, we have YouTube, and all these things to still keep preaching no matter what, to keep preaching. And we should adjust our preaching to warn people, hey, you got to take this seriously. Things are not going to get better. They're going to get worse and worse and worse. This is just a warning from nature. You can't keep doing all these things. I was in the supermarket. I always have to say something about me. But I was in the supermarket, and somebody was stocking up on their food because they may have to be hunkered down for 2 or 3 weeks, and they had a basket full of meat, just from top to bottom of meat. Every kind of meat under the sun. And I had to control myself. I felt like just pounding that person, just jumping and start hitting them and beating them. What's wrong with you? Don't you understand what you're doing? Don't you understand? This is one of the problems. What can be done? So you just have to stick to our program more than ever. Okay, it's 9 o'clock, so...
I have a question.
Yeah.
It looks like Krishna also appeared as a Dhanvantari incarnation for medicine. So you have given a very nice angle of vision that the biggest problem with the coronavirus, because it affected the economy, that's why everybody's reacting more than it's supposed to or whatever. But is it also that because they don't have a control of it? Because it's like out of control means they don't know how to minimize the effect of the coronavirus. And big dignitaries even getting affected, so it's kind of like threatening. But then at the same time we see that Krishna appears as the incarnation called Dhanvantara, comes for the medicine, with the medicine. So is that not okay that they should be actually looking for medicine also? How to keep the society diseaseless or free from danger? even though there is danger, but then I see the both side.
Well, as I mentioned, the leaders, like before Parikshit Maharaj, this didn't exist. This didn't exist in previous yugas. These kind of disease and pestilence and food shortages and all starvation, this didn't exist previously. So the reason it's happening now is because they're not following the Yuga Dharma. They're still, you know, the scientists are still in control, and that now their authority there is challenged by these diseases, and they're on the hook to come up with a cure, and they probably will come up with a cure sooner or later, and that's good. But unless they correct the fundamental problem, the underlying problem, the spiritual disease, unless they cure that, they're just treating the symptoms. These are just the symptoms. And it will just, something else will come along to take its place, sooner rather than later. So that's all we can do. We can't do much else than that. We could try to help do this and that. We're certainly there to support whatever material things are needed for these situations. We don't say stop work, we say work, but work for Krishna. So that's all we can do.
Thank you. Okay. Just to clear the announcement that actually we are not just closing the door, we are locked, we are locking down. So the temple is closed till tomorrow morning. From now.